Okay, my name is Francina Turner, and I'm conducting an oral history interview with Nasozi Kakembo for the Black Experience at UMD Oral History Project. And I want to first ask you, when did you enter and then graduate from the university?
So I entered in the fall of 2001, and I graduated in May of 2005. I spent one semester at Catholic University, and that was my junior year fall, I believe, fall semester. And so I had formally withdrawn from Maryland and enrolled at Catholic, into Catholic, and then came back to Maryland. So otherwise straight through, except for one semester elsewhere.
What's your hometown?
My hometown is Silver Spring / Columbia, Maryland. So born and raised in Silver Spring until middle school. And then my family moved to Columbia, Maryland, where I completed middle school and high school.
How would you describe your life prior to coming to the University of Maryland? And with this question, I'm trying to get at kind of in one question, what was your home community like, your family composition, thoughts on higher education, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so I think growing up in Maryland and the relative like DC suburbs, and then later in Columbia in the more relative to Baltimore suburb, but still firmly planted between those two major metropolises, I had a really great upbringing in Maryland. And I think now looking back, and now that I'm a mother and I'm back in Maryland, I lived in Brooklyn for 12 years and I'm raising a son here. He's currently 13. We moved here when he was eight. One of the most important experiences and like foundational and fundamental experiences that I had growing up here was just the representation of people who looked like me or had shared experiences in all aspects of everyday life, whether that was, you know, literally like blue collar, white collar, academia, my principals, my post office, you know, my postal work, postal delivery people, doctors, everybody, like we were represented in all aspects. And it wasn't like a homogeneity or anything like that, but we were not the exception to any of those spaces, and neither were people who didn't look like us. And so I came into Maryland, University of Maryland, and thus into the world, not feeling at all like an exception, not feeling at all like intimidated by being in a room of people who didn't look like me when I later encountered that in other professional settings in America. Of course, when I began to travel the world to different countries, it wasn't so much unexpected that I might be in a room where people don't look like me or speak the same language. But growing up in Maryland, specifically in this general region of Maryland, I just never felt otherized. Maybe it was a naivete, I'm not sure. But and I feel like I experienced that as well. Like with my peers as well, my peers who I grew up with, in terms of those of us who came from Black and brown ethnic backgrounds. And we also had friends of all different walks of life. So I really think that was important in shaping how we then navigated into the adult world. Education-wise, I definitely remember when we lived in Silver Spring, the first neighborhood that we lived in, my parents had just moved back to the States. My father is Ugandan. My mother is African-American. She had been living in Germany for close to 20 years. My father had never lived in the States, and he got placed into a medical residency at Howard University. So they moved from Germany to Silver Spring, and we're basically starting from scratch. So we were in Silver Spring in a lower middle class, yet upwardly mobile apartment complex And the school there, I remember the school and even my school, my academic performance was not good. I was not a good student in that school. And I don't actually know why, but once we moved in like fourth or fifth grade and we moved to a more upper middle class neighborhood, a few miles away, still within Silver Spring, but a few miles away. And I was just in a different academic environment. Perhaps there was more PTA money in that school. I actually did quite well. My academic record really improved. The first school I was into was that I attended. The school was primarily, or so, you know, at least half of the families and the children there were from immigrant families. And this is in the early to mid 80s. So there's upheaval all over the world. And a lot of those students and families were resettled in the DC area. So families from Ethiopia, families from Central America, families from Africa, families from the former Soviet bloc. That's what my neighborhood looked like. And the families were all just trying to figure it out. So there wasn't much extra time to be doing PTA things in that neighborhood and in that school. My second school there was, and it just showed up in my performance somehow. And then Columbia, I moved to Columbia later in middle school. And my academic performance continued on a strong path. I feel like I had a solid educational experience in Howard County public schools as well.
And I just want to clarify, when your family made the move from Germany, were you already born? Had you lived in Germany?
I wasn't born yet. They moved here so that I could be born as an American. And then they moved back to Germany because my mother had to finish up some work. So we stayed there for a little bit longer. I'm too young to remember. I don't remember any of that. And then they came back to the States, all within a span of like a year or two. I do have two older brothers who were born in Germany, and their first language was German. One of those brothers moved here with us, and he began here in, I think it was, what grade was he in? Maybe first grade, kindergarten or first grade, as a German only speaker. So he had another experience entirely, a Black kid who only spoke German in Silver Spring in the early 80s. But that's also a bit of, our family composition as well.
And you say your dad had, he did a medical residency at Howard. So your father was a physician. What did your mom do?
So my mother, she's a Jane of all trades in a sense. She studied nursing. So she has her degrees in nursing. She also studied literature. And once she moved to Washington, D.C., she really got plugged into the African diplomatic circle. So she has done a lot of public relations and community building between the kind of the wives and representatives of African ambassadors coming to the U.S. and really engaging them in the community in the Washington, D.C. area, either in the form of building connections with other African-American women who live here. And she's also done a lot of work with African art galleries and African arts and culture in the Washington, D.C. area. She used to manage an African art gallery in Georgetown, in Upper Georgetown, and she did that for most of my childhood. So she's just always been plugged into and working on strengthening the cultural ties between Africa and African Americans in the context of culture and the arts.
How did you come to make the decision to go to the University of Maryland?
So for me, it was looking back, I'm like, did I even think about this? Not that I regret it at all, but I almost feel like I could have perhaps in a way used more guidance because I was a state champion for track and field. And I was being recruited by lots of schools, primarily on the East Coast. But my academic passion was architecture. And I was hearing from everybody around me that you can't be a student athlete and an architecture major at the same time because architecture is so demanding, late nights, et cetera. And so I decided to forego any sports opportunity in pursuit of a degree in architecture, which, long story short, I didn't end up obtaining. But between knowing that Maryland had a solid architecture program, a very well-respected and high-ranked architecture program, and I think I also wasn't quite comfortable with, I didn't really have a desire to go far from home. And a lot of my friends were going to Maryland, a lot of my high school friends, my neighborhood, even kids from my neighborhood. We were always very just school oriented. We loved school, we enjoyed it, we did well. And so most of us who applied to Maryland got into Maryland. That's essentially why I decided to go there. It's the only school I applied to. I didn't even apply anywhere else.
And you mentioned that you didn't end up getting the degree in architecture. What did end up being your major?
So my major ended up being art history, where I still had an option to focus and dabble into architecture, with a minor in Spanish, which I had started learning in middle school, actually, in seventh grade. So I continued with Spanish all the way through.
Walk me through when you originally enrolled, was it architecture and then you changed your mind? How did you make the shift from one to the other?
Yeah, so that was a bit of a disappointing experience, and also ultimately why I had that break in my time at Maryland. So there was one manner in which you could apply for the School of Architecture straight out of high school. I think I wasn't aware of that option until I got to Maryland. So I don't know if that was, you know, a misstep in the academic counseling or the advisor relationship, although I recall having engaged advisors, but somehow that piece of information eluded me. So anyway, if you didn't get accepted straight into acceptance into the university, you could apply going into your junior year after taking 2 years worth of prerequisites and core courses for architecture. So those were physics courses. They were certain architectural history courses, basically a very architecture heavy course load. And then you submit a portfolio and they review your grades. And then they tell you whether you got into architecture or not. I didn't get into architecture. And I was completely bummed because, like, I had been really pursuing architecture since I was a child, but they, for whatever reason, and I mean, it's definitely in terms of the entire industry, it's a very white old boys club industry, and the school itself really looked like that. Me coming into that School of Architecture from my world, from my bubble, perhaps, I didn't realize what I was potentially up against in doing that. And it wouldn't have changed my pursuit, but perhaps I would have appealed their decision or really not just conceded and gone to Catholic University, where I did apply kind of mid-year and was accepted into their architecture program when I got the Maryland information, the Maryland program decision. So I started out, you know, heavily in pursuit of architecture at Maryland. And when that didn't work out, I left, got to Catholic, didn't like their program. And then I was just like, you know what, I'll do something as close to architecture as I can, finish up on time. So I did have to take a few summer school classes and then finished up in art history, which I ended up loving anyway, and then graduated on time in May of 2005.
Had you been to the University of Maryland prior to coming as a freshman?
I had. I was accepted into the honors program. So we had a couple of kind of honors program orientations before the first day of school. And I don't recall if there was anything else, but there were at least one or two orientations that I attended in the context of that honors program or being newly accepted.
So you're accepted, you're an incoming freshman, you're coming to move into the dorms. What are your earliest memories of being a freshman at university?
My earliest memories, just kind of the range of, well, there were two memories, and I think part of this actually started in high school, but once I got to Maryland, it was very stark. But maybe like freshman or sophomore year of high school, I remember there started to be a very noticeable divide between the white friends I grew up with and who, like, they were my friends, and then like my Black friends. Not that even those two pools were distinct, but people who gravitated more toward the white culture and set of friends, and those who gravitated more toward the Black. And so, like, we weren't going to the same parties anymore. We weren't invited to the same parties anymore. We didn't sit with each other at lunch anymore. And I remember being like, oh, like, that just kind of took me aback when I realized that that was beginning to happen in high school. And then by the time we got to college, because many of us attended University of Maryland, it was just like, oh, well, forget it. Like, that's a wrap. Like, we're not intermingling anymore. And it was unfortunate and odd. And, you know, there were no dramas or any, there were no triggers to that. But just for whatever reason, the way that the chips fell and in that space and in that context, we naturally gravitated to people who looked like us. So that I did find odd. That was very noticeable. But what was also noticeable and what I remember was just like the spirit and like the joy and energy of just like Black students on campus from like everywhere. There were a lot of New York students. And so like their energy and like their, you know, just language, it was just so cool to be around Black people from all over the United States, but like heavily from New York, some from the South as well. So I just really liked that. And we had a lot of fun together. And everybody was just super smart.
I forgot to ask you, what high school did you graduate from?
I graduated from Hammond High School in Columbia.
What were your living arrangements? Which dorm or residence hall did you live in?
I wish I remembered the name. I was in one of the massive dorms freshman year. It was on the quad that had the what was in the center? I wasn't too far from the gym complex, but I was very far at that time. I know the campus has since expanded, but in 2001, I was very far north. I think that's north, very far north on campus, a few steps away from the kinesiology building. And there was also a gym in there at the time, a new gym. So I'm sure it's still there, although it might not be considered new anymore. So I don't remember the name, but it was one of those huge, tall buildings.
And is that where you lived the full time you were at Maryland?
No. So that was the first, I think the full first year. And then by my sophomore year, I had learned about a language immersion house, the languages house, just across from the student union. And I applied for Spanish to be in this one of the Spanish apartments, and I was accepted. So I lived in the Spanish house for, I think, maybe my full sophomore year, my entire sophomore year. And then I finagled my way into the Courtyards apartments. I think through a summer sublet, but technically maybe that was even while I was still a sophomore. Underclass men, women, people were not really permitted to live there yet, but I found a loophole and I got in through a sublet through summer. and then stayed in the courtyards for maybe another year, and then moved off campus, with got a house with some friends.
Did you belong to any campus-based clubs or social organizations while you were at Maryland?
So the Language House was considered a proper like organization. So I was a member of the Spanish Language Immersion Home. And I don't remember if I was a formal member or if I was just like a staunch participant, but in the Black Student Union, I think is what we called it. And then also maybe the African Student Union.
Did you belong to any of those kind of organizations off campus, a church or, you know, anything in, more so in the community as opposed to on campus?
No, not then. No.
How would you describe general race relations when you were on campus, be it in social situations or even in the classroom?
Yeah, so generally, I think they were fine, especially compared to what I've heard of late. Again, I never felt, you know, like an other prior to coming to Maryland, not during any of my experiences at Maryland, insofar as I was able to recognize that at that time. I was 17 when I started at Maryland, and having come from a place where I wasn't so confronted by that on a daily basis, I think my radar and my guard were, they're definitely not where they are now that I know, and I'm just am more aware of the ways in which racial nuances can show up. At that time, I didn't feel or experience anything as far as I know. Nothing went on to define my experience in racial terms, apart from the fact that we were so segregated. But that was like more, you know, more voluntary than anything that wasn't. I even think in terms of, you know, representation in class, of course, there were some classes in which I was the only, you know, African American or African student, because I did, you know, I took a lot of Spanish classes, higher level, all the way through the fourth level. So most of my classmates were of, you know, Latino, Hispanic, Afro-Latino backgrounds. So yeah, I was the only one in that class, perhaps, but like that seems kind of normal to me in a sense. Physics and the others, yeah, I mean, I feel like in the others, there was, you know, more or less fair representation, because the school itself, I think, is very diverse. I don't know what the statistics break down exactly to be, but in terms of my professors and lecturers, I do remember them being mostly not Black, depending on the course. They were professors of color, I suppose. But like in my African art history courses, I think most of those professors were white. My science courses, I remember an Indian professor. The one African-American professor, unfortunately, I don't recall his name, but who really stands out to me, was a race and public policy professor. And I did actually pull up my transcript so that I could at least get the number of that course in case you were curious, because if we get into a part at all about which professor had the biggest impact, he would be the one.
And that absolutely is a question a little bit later. You were reading my mind. Did you work while you were in school? And if so, where?
I did work while I was in school. I think it was like the summer of the school year before beginning, or one of the summers, I was a front desk like hostess at a hotel in Columbia. And so I continued doing that on a part-time basis throughout parts of school, not the entire time. But I did continue to do that at times. And I also worked at like a Banana Republic for maybe that didn't last very long.
What do you remember of campus activities while you were there? Concerts, speakers, parties, cultural events, those kind of things.
Yeah, all of the above. All of the above. I remember in particular, and I find myself recounting this story probably the most often out of any of them, but I remember when Kanye West was brand new and they had a Kanye West concert like in the Stamp. And the Black student BSU organized it. And he was like this brand new artist. He didn't have a record yet or anything. But yeah, Kanye West performed. There were other like, you know, kind of headliners and such, but they always had good entertainment. And yeah, those were really fun. They were very like wholesome events. There was no drama. Like people were just going to have fun. And of course, the athletic events, the games were always a big deal and a lot of fun to participate in and to get dressed up for and to go with friends. That definitely became part of our, you know, socialization. And then other cultural events. Yeah, one of my good friends, she's Colombian American, and we had classes together. And so she was involved in, I think, the Latino student organization. So I remember they put on a big thing, a big gala or something. And so she invited me and I joined that with her. So I feel like there was always something. The other one too, that was really fun, again, put on by the Black Student Union, the open mic nights. Those were extremely popular. And one of my good friends who I met in those days, and you're probably familiar with him now, but he got his start in those open mic nights, but Jason Reynolds, who's now, you know, New York Times bestseller 12 times over. And that's, you know, that's where we went to support Jason or to clown Jason and to really just, it was a social evening. And it just, yeah, it felt good. Those were really fun times. So those are the ones that immediately, and then of course, when you had the pledge nights, when the sororities and the fraternities came out and they did their initial pledge, which was just outside of, I think, the Black Student Union area. That was another really fun and eagerly anticipated event that took place on campus.
Now, was this the event to introduce the pledges while they were pledges, or like the neophyte to introduce the ones who crossed to the campus?
I think this was like the introduction once all the pledging was done.
Yeah, I remember being in school and those were always amazing because you would kind of be like, that's where you were, that's why you were
right.
I thought you just weren't calling me back.
yeah exactly, those were amazing.
Okay. Do you remember any campus protests during your time there, whether it was something about the campus or even a larger social or political issue?
I don't. I think my answer would be much different today, but for whatever reason, I think collectively we just weren't, you know, in that activistic space yet. That's not to say there weren't things that, you know, probably had room for improvement, but I feel by and large, we were just there trying to have a good time and get our education in the early 2000s.
Okay. So in which physical spaces on campus did you feel the most and then maybe least welcome during your time there, if at all?
Yeah. The most would probably be the Stamp and the Black Student Union area. I don't recall what the name is of, like, is it the student Stamp is the large, area. Yeah, Stamp. And then there was a building right across the street, which is where the Black Student Union was housed. I mean, I felt comfortable all over campus, but the one area that I only went to one time, and I know in general, Black students were just like, we don't have any business going over there, but was fraternity row, frat row. That just never interested me. They did have there was a concert there one time, like right in that open grass area. I think it was soon after school opened back up. And that was fun. I think it was a hip hop group. That was fun. But apart from that, I just never went to frat row. It just seemed like we didn't have any business there.
I wonder if the building you were talking about where the BSU met was Nimburu.
Yes, exactly.
And now we arrive at the question about professors that you felt were really supportive, and then also consequently, if you had professors that maybe weren't so supportive, that stick out in your memory.
Yeah, so the professor, and I'm sure if we did a little more digging around, we could find his name. But this was, now where did I write it down? So I think the number was, it was race and public policy. And I think that it was 399R. And I remember that so we could choose any book that we wanted, like on that particular topic. I think this was for our final. And I chose the book, Lying Down with Lions. And I can tell you the name of the author. So Lying Down with Lions by Ronald V. Dellums. And my paper in response to that, the professor, like for the first time, I had a professor not just like pull me aside and tell me how good my paper was executed and well thought out, but he was like, you have the potential to be a writer. Like the way that you've constructed everything here is, and I think he even wrote it on the paper. And I know that I have that paper still somewhere because it made such an impact that I never threw it away. But nobody had ever told me that before. And I didn't know that I was a good writer. I did enjoy it. I knew that I liked writing, but I never had a person of authority tell me that I had the potential to do that in a professional way. So he absolutely, he's, you know, the one that I truly remember for that reason in particular. And I just enjoyed and learned so much from his class. It was the first, and I think only kind of race and policy course I'd ever taken. It wasn't something I was necessarily interested in, but I think it fit, you know, in my schedule block at that time. And I also later went on to earn my master's in urban planning with a focus on international development. And so all of that is extremely policy heavy. And I knew and I felt that at times where at Columbia, I earned my degree from Columbia, at times where I felt like I didn't belong in that space, I remembered him telling me that I did belong in that space. And I had the potential to excel in that space and remembered that I had done that. I'd already done it. So in a huge way, he really changed the course of my life.
Walk me through your memories of the last time you walked off the campus as an undergraduate, as a graduating student.
I mean, I remember my graduation day more or less, but it was also kind of a blur. my program, so in graduating in art history, it was a small program, and none of my friends were in that program. So none of my friends were in that graduation. I didn't form any meaningful bonds with anybody in my program. Looking back, it's kind of a regret, but I'm sure if there were really a, you know, a natural inclination to do so, it would have been, you know, we would have done that. But I didn't really keep in touch with people who I engaged with, like academically or in class. I just had my own set of friends with who were initially friends from school and, you know, who I grew up with. And then we kind of branched out and added on other groups of friends, and, you know, from there. But my core was always friends who I had from school, from, you know, from high school and growing up. So, yeah, I mean, the last time leaving campus wasn't so memorable, I think, because I knew and felt strongly at that time that you know, the friendships, although I was preparing to move to New York, I had accepted a job in New York City, but I still felt like, oh, you know, I'll come down every weekend, I'll still see my friends. It's just going to be life as usual, except we're going to be adults now. And we're like, we're going to have our own apartments and we're going to pay bills and everything's going to be super easy.
So, oh, the things we think when we graduate.
Exactly.
So you're graduating. Did you go directly to graduate school? You said you had a job in New York.
So I worked in New York for 1 year, and then I went, and then I began my grad program after 1 year.
Was your position in New York art history related?
It was architecture related. So that was kind of my workaround too, that I told myself, like, oh, well, I'll just finish up here at Maryland in art history. I'll take as many architecture related art history courses as I can, and then apply for a master's in architecture. So in the meantime, I worked basically office jobs in architecture for a year.
And how did you make a decision to go to graduate school and which graduate school to apply to and what to major in?
So for me, for whatever reason, maybe because my parents have advanced degrees, it was just always, and my brothers, I have two, you know, I mentioned my two older brothers. It was just always a given that, like, you know, grad school seemed like the next logical step. Nobody was forcing me to do it by any means or really even talking about it, but that's, I was emulating what I saw in my family and, you know, in my friends group, we were all talking about it. That's just what we did. We just kept going to school. And I forgot the other part of your question. What was the other part?
How did you determine Columbia? And then how did you determine what you were going to focus in?
Right. So I knew I wanted to focus, or I thought I knew I wanted to focus on architecture, since this was my attempted workaround at not being satisfied or getting into the program of my choice in undergraduate. I knew I was making a decision when, you know, applying for jobs and thinking of postgraduate life, I was choosing between New York City and Atlanta, because those to me was where really great architecture schools were. And as it, you know, would turn out, my best friend from childhood, she was at Wellesley College, and she had her first job in New York. So we just decided, oh, well, we'll be roommates in New York. So I moved to New York and decided I would do the year of architecture, you know, office job, admin job, and then apply for architecture programs at all of the schools in New York City. And so that's what I did. I applied to Pratt, Parsons, Columbia, and maybe one more. But then when I was at Columbia, and in those days you had to, you know, go pick up a physical application or they could mail it to you, but I was already living in New York. So I took the train to Columbia to the admissions office and I picked up a physical application, and then they also had other student publications like on the same display console. And so I picked up an urban planning student magazine, student published, produced and published urban planning magazine. And then on the long train ride from Morningside Heights back to Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, where I was living at the time, I started reading and learning about urban planning. I didn't even know so much what it was. And as I read more of that, of the student magazine on the way back on the train, I was like, wait, actually, this is what I want to do. This has policy in it. This is how I can actually affect the change that I want to make and want to see happen in the world. By that time, I had also started traveling more frequently to Uganda, and just had more of an awareness of the disparities in the opportunities and lives of between myself here in the US and my cousins and very, very close family members in Uganda. And I had questions and I wanted to find answers to and solutions to why there, you know, to address what I considered issues and in those disparities. So opened the application, and for that school of that graduate school program, you could submit basically a universal application. You just had to tick off, you know, the box for architecture or real estate development or urban planning. There are about five disciplines within that graduate school. So I checked off the box for architecture. I checked off the box for urban planning, submitted my supporting materials. And when the admissions letters came, I got into urban planning, but I didn't get into architecture. So I was like, all right, that's fine. I want to do urban planning. I did get into architecture in some other schools. I think it was Parsons. I did get into architecture, but by that time I was already so sold on the urban planning field that that's what I chose to do.
And you said that you did urban planning with a focus and could you tell me what your entire thing was again?
Yeah, urban planning with a focus on international development and planning.
Okay. And when did you enter and exit Columbia?
Entered fall of 2006 and graduated May of 2008, right during the Great Recession.
Did you go any further in higher education than that?
No. Okay. Wait. Yeah, I mean, I have an executive certificate in business communications from Johns Hopkins Carey School of Business. I worked at Hopkins for 2.5 years in the School of Public Health. So I just racked up as many free courses there while I could. And I did earn that executive certificate.
So you left Columbia. And you said you worked at Hopkins and the School of Public Health. Was that right out of Columbia? Kind of what was your trajectory after that?
Oh, wow. So that'll be a fun conversation. When I graduated Columbia, my first job out of Columbia was for the Open Society Institute, now Foundations. They're now known as the Open Society Foundations. And I worked there for 4 years. And that is human rights and social justice philanthropy. And I started out as first I was a temp and then program assistant. And then got promoted a couple of times throughout the course over the course of the next 4 years. So that in that role, I worked in basically the organizational like budget and strategy oversight office. It was a smaller office within the president, the office of the president. And we oversaw the programmatic, the budgets and the strategies for all of the grant making programs at the organization. So for me, that was more so, I ended up learning a lot of, essentially it was a nonprofit, but it was business strategy. I learned a lot of just like business management, nonprofit management in that role, which is not what I studied, but I had the contextual education for it, having come from the international planning, you know, background and degree. So I was there for four years. And then I decided that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. 2 years into working at the Open Society Foundations, I basically started a side business working with African textiles and crafts for the home. So between my travels to and from Uganda and my mother's background and connections to all parts of Africa, having worked in the art, having managed an art gallery, I set up an e-commerce website and shop in 2011. And then I also started selling at the various street festivals and markets in and around New York City. And then I did that for 4 years full time. Then I got burnt out and I was still living in New York. I wanted to come closer to home. My son was in like first or second grade and just wanted to come back to family. New York City had just really taken its toll, I think, and decided to come back and was trying to figure out what marketable skills I had. Having been an entrepreneur and self-employed for the past 4 years at that time, which is now in a way more mainstream, especially now with work from home. And, you know, there's really an almost unprecedented number of Black females becoming self-employed and entrepreneurs in response to many, many circumstances. When I was doing it, it wasn't common. And so people didn't really take me seriously at times, or they just thought it was like a hobby or like somebody must be supporting me behind the scenes, but none of those things were true. It was my livelihood. So the business was successful though. I just got really burnt out. And so I decided to look for just a regular, like a 9-to-5 job. I wanted a 9-to-5. I wanted benefits. I wanted to know when the check was coming and how much it was. And I wanted somebody to tell me what to do. So long story short, you know, and in bouncing ideas and discussing this with friends, my friends were like, you have a great communications and marketing background. You ran your whole business for 4 years. That was a very pivotal part to the success of your business. Like, why don't you look for jobs in communications and marketing? So I worked in, I was a communications associate at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health for 2.5 years. And so that was early 2017 that I started there. Left there for a small firm for about a year and a half. And then that just was not the right fit. And the pandemic hit and, you know, going back to my entrepreneurial spirit, I'm like, I don't have to deal with this nonsense. So I've been working for myself ever since September of 2020. We have gone back into my business full time. So
back into the textiles.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, I have to ask, what's your website?
My website is xnasozistudio.com.
Xnasozi Studio is all one word?
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
And so what has been your relationship to the University of Maryland since you graduated?
Yeah, so mostly, I mean, I haven't had I won't say that I've had a strong relationship since I graduated. And I would like for it to actually be stronger. I don't know if it's because I knew that we were having this meeting today or if this is something that's heavily on my conscience, but I actually had a dream last night that I went back to one of my friends from school who I'm still in touch with and was like, when are we going to do this, you know, this Black student reunion? Like, there's so many of us in the DMV. There are so many of us here. When are we going to do this reunion? And that's actually a conversation that we had before. And it has come up several points throughout the years. Obviously, the past 2 years has kind of been like, we're not doing any of that. But the world is opening back up again. And so I think the combination of this conversation and just feeling like we can do things, or we're just going to have to figure out how to do things again, led me to have that dream. Because like I said, there's so many of us in the DC area, and we are all doing really interesting and amazing things. And I wish that there were somehow a more, maybe I'm missing it, but whenever I reach out or I'm corresponding with friends, mostly on Instagram, we don't have a centralized community or place or network where we can really be resources, very valuable resources to each other. That said, I do feel like at any time I could reach out to, you know, to somebody, to a friend who I went to school with, and vice versa. If there's anything that I can do to help them, you know, professionally or otherwise, you know, those bonds were formed. I'm available for that. And I feel very comfortable in the reverse. So I don't know so much that it needs to be formalized, even if it were like, I know there's like, maybe there's a Facebook group or a LinkedIn group. I know there's a larger University of Maryland College Park LinkedIn group, but it would just be nice to have that more, you know, a more centralized way of being connected, like just having the DMV network really solidified. I forgot what your question was because I started to ramble.
No, that was it. Just kind of what was your relationship to the university? And what I'm hearing, and I just want to kind of make sure that what I'm hearing is what you're saying, that you have a stronger connection to the friends and the bonds you built than to the institution.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And I do, like, one of the friends from those days, she met her husband at University of Maryland, and he was a football player, and then he played pro for a few years. And I know they still have like a very strong relationship. They still go back to the games. They take their kids to games. And I've endeavored to do that with my son. I just haven't done it. And I do, you know, I have friends who go back for homecoming. Part of it is because I just wasn't here for so many years. I was gone for 12 years. And then when I came back, I was just in such a different headspace, but slowly but surely, like, I am really trying to figure out a way to be meaningfully engaged, and be part of, you know, the University of Maryland community. But yeah, I do have my friends go back to the games. A lot of them were at the most recent homecoming event. So just figuring out what makes sense for me.
Okay. And so my closing question is there anything you'd like to share about considering your time at the University of Maryland as a message to current or future students? And here I'm particularly talking about Black students.
Yeah, so I feel like it has probably, for me, it feels like college was yesterday, but really, you know, counting the number of years, it was a long time ago. I think University of Maryland is a wonderful campus for Black students to really flourish and thrive, even though, you know, we're not an HBCU, and some of our HBCU, and I actually, that was another part that I forgot to mention earlier, but I did take a class at Howard University through the consortium. So maybe that's my key piece of advice, actually, is to take advantage of that consortium and take a class at Howard. That semester, I took Brazilian Portuguese at Howard University for one semester. And actually, even from that one semester, like, gained some of my closest friends also, who I'm still friends with. Being in a space, and once I took that class, I also then understood like why and how all of my HBCU friends just like own their Blackness in a way that I didn't even know existed, because all of your academic and educational reference points start from a Black, like, if it's relevant, it's starting from the Black contribution to that field. And you're taught that, and you're told that on the very first day. And like that, like, sent chills up my spine the very first day. I was like, holy shit. Like, yeah, you're right. And it's not, again, it's not the exception. That's just actually history. That's the story. It's not, you know, critical race theory. Like, this is actually reality. This is critical reality that is intentionally omitted in the very traditional structures of curricula to date. And Howard University just wasn't doing that. And that was huge. That was huge. And I loved it. So, you know, I love Maryland. I think Maryland has so much to offer, including the opportunity to dabble in other programs in the DC area. So, also the earlier you know what you want to do, the better, because you'll just, you know, it'll take you less time and less money. Time is money. And last I checked the tuition at Maryland, that has most certainly changed. That has most certainly gone up. But try to have a sense of what you want to do as early as possible, and take a class or two at Howard.
And so I said that was my last question. This is really my last question. It occurred to me while you were talking, you've lived in New York, you grew up in the DMV area, but you've also traveled the world to some degree. I find there's something very unique about the DMV area, but I'm not from there, so I can't really put my finger on explaining it.
Okay.
What do you find, if anything, to be unique and sort of amazing about the DMV area?
What I find to be unique and really something amazing is what I touched on earlier in our conversation, and that's just the vast representation and reflection of all corners of the world in this space, and also in a different way than in New York City. New York City is like supposedly the melting pot, et cetera, but New York City is very segregated, and it's very clear who has money and power and authority there and who doesn't. That's something that just really got under my skin about that experience. Of course, there are exceptions to the rule. Those tend to not be people from New York City, but you can be born and raised in the DC area, generations going back, and access to opportunity is not a new thing to you. Of course, there's the range. Of course, there's a huge socioeconomic disparity in the DC area, and tremendous displacement as a result of the gentrification that has taken place in Washington, DC, the highest rate in the entire country. That's a real thing. But that's not our only story here. And I think that, you know, that makes me so proud to come from here specifically, because I know that we occupy all strata of society, and we're not a monolithic. The Black story and the Black experience here is so dynamic, and it's so varied. And it can be, you know, the 7th Ward of Washington, D.C., and it can also be Columbia, Maryland, or, or Potomac, or what have you. But you can see what, your life can be like just by looking around you and seeing people who look like you doing it. And so for me, that, and again, I don't know specifically whether that's so unique to hear, but one of, I remember like in meeting even more Black students at Howard University, that was a newer experience for them, because they came literally like from all over the country. Whereas at Maryland, it was like a lot of New York and a lot of people from the South, but at Howard, they're literally coming from all over the country and the world, and just seeing like us in all manner of, you know, roles and authoritative spaces in the DC area was something that they commented on. And they're like, you know, they really hadn't seen or experienced this before. So having grown up in this, I think is really something special about being from the DC area.
Well, I want to thank you for taking your time to do this interview with me. It has been really enlightening. If I have any follow-up questions, is it okay to reach out again?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.